This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The war effort in Iraq may soon have a new top commander. Officials at the Pentagon say that U.S. Army Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez will be replaced this summer. The decision comes after allegations surfaced this weekend that the general may have known about abuses at Abu Ghraib prison while they were going on. Pentagon officials deny those allegations and say the move to replace Sanchez is just a standard rotation after some time, 13 months, in Iraq. They say the decision is tactical. President Bush today praised General Sanchez's performance. Joining us now is Thomas Ricks, a military reporter for The Washington Post. He joins us from the newspaper's offices here in Washington, D.C. Good to speak with you again.
Thanks for having me.
You've reported the Pentagon has been considering this change for months now. How does this help?
Well, the chain of command in Iraq is a pretty tangled setup, and I think you have several dozen U.S. generals in Iraq now. The notion of putting in a new four-star commander, that's the highest rank a general can have, it would be that he would preside over all of these and also would deal with the new ambassador, Negroponte, on more equal terms. So it's both to give the military more of a voice and also to enable unity of command in U.S. military operations in Iraq. General Sanchez, for example, did not have or does not have command over some special operations and intelligence operations functions inside Iraq, even though he is a senior ground commander in Iraq.
So the name that surfaced as his replacement is now a four-star general, and that's the vice army chief of staff, General Casey.
That's right. And General Casey, among other things, is quite close to General Abizay, the U.S. commander for the entire region. In fact, there's kind of this joke in the Pentagon because Casey has followed Abizay in lockstep through several jobs on the joint staff, first as the head of planning for the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and then as the director of the joint staff, which is a very inside baseball job at the Pentagon, but a very important job.
The timing of this leaves open the question, though, of if General Sanchez is last week in testimony before the Senate. He said, you know, of course he has to accept responsibility for Abu Ghraib because it happened on his watch. But he said as soon as he found out about it, he moved quickly to shut it down.
Well, there are a couple of things going on here. The plan had always been to move General Sanchez out at some point. Commanders had talked to me about this back in January. But the thought had been to move him on to a four-star billet himself, probably as chief of the U.S. Southern Command for most of Central America and South America and the Caribbean. It'd be a good fit. He comes from the Rio Grande Valley. He speaks Spanish and is of Mexican-American heritage. That may not be his fate now. I would not be surprised if the Army found a quiet corner to put him in inside the Army, a less prominent position, or even if he were gently nudged toward retirement at this point. That's mainly because the confirmation hearings he would face might be difficult and would expose the Pentagon and the Bush administration to yet another round of questioning on Capitol Hill.
If in effect, he is being taking some of the hit for Abu Ghraib, wouldn't it be worth it from the Pentagon's point of view and from the administration's point of view to say, aha, there's the man responsible. See, we've taken steps. He's resigning. He's stepping down or being replaced because of this, as opposed to saying, hey, he's done a wonderful job. This has nothing to do with it.
Well, I think the problem with that is that it might be cynical, but it wouldn't be true. And it would probably provoke a lot of objections. I've had senior commanders say to me, look, you can have differences with Rick Sanchez on this, but he has done this by the book. He's a very by-the-book soldier. He's done everything he's supposed to do. So I think that kind of just hanging it around his neck would make him look more like a scapegoat than anything else. Although there is a deep suspicion in the military of what they call different spanks for different ranks when they see enlisted people charged and officers get letters of admonishment. So I think there is a sense both inside the military and outside the military that you can't just charge a bunch of people below the rank of sergeant, that actually a few senior officers should somehow do more than just orally accept responsibility, should actually suffer at least a hiccup in their career, if nothing more than that. And so far, that has not been seen.
The general who was in charge of the reserve unit, the guard unit that was running things at Abu Ghraib, though running some things and not other, another case in which the chain of command was a bit muddled. But she has now been suspended, though not relieved of command. What's the distinction there?
I don't know, and I haven't come across this in all the years I've covered the military, but I've never seen a case like this before. I have never seen a U.S. Army unit that is so appalling. When you read General Taguba's 15-6 report, there's like paragraphs that haven't hardly made the news that in normal circumstances would make a front-page scandal all by themselves. This was an astonishingly badly run unit, if General Taguba's allegations are correct. So it amazes me that General Karpinski has only been, quote-unquote, suspended, whatever that means, at this point, and that more serious charges have not been brought. I'm amazed that she still was left in command all this time. Now, on the other hand, she has a very aggressive defense lawyer, and she has made it clear that she is willing to practice a scorched earth defense here. She's not going to take the hit. She's going to point the finger at others, whether it's General Sanchez or intelligence officers.
Over the past several days, retired military officials have come out and been bitterly critical of U.S. policies in Iraq. General Zinni and General Hoare, both themselves former CENTCOM commanders-in-chief. These are no small potatoes. How is their criticism being received at the Pentagon?
I think it's kind of being shrugged off for the reason that Generals Zinni and Hoare, while widely respected in the Marines especially, are longtime opponents of the war. Both testified against going in before the actual invasion. They were up on Capitol Hill formally arguing against it. What strikes me more in recent days is we're seeing people who have served in Iraq, some of them on the record, some of them on background, saying, time out, this is not going well. I was surprised at the discrepancy between the president's speech last night and the mood I heard on the ground last month in Iraq from some officers, not from all officers, but from some officers, that there are big problems here with the organization of the effort, with the conventional army fighting an unconventional war, with the relationship between the U.S. military and the U.S. civilian effort there. Lots of problems they'd like to see addressed. They do want to win, and so I think those guys are more newsworthy than guys like Zinni and Hoare, who have long been opposed to the U.S. going into Iraq.
Are some of those concerns surfacing when we hear General Abizaid talk about the wrong doctrine, the wrong military doctrine in Iraq?
Well, I think when General Abizaid was testifying about the wrong doctrine, he was using it in very narrow terms to mean doctrine in the U.S. Army sense means how we think about a certain act, how we do something. And there he was saying the military, police, and intelligence people have the wrong, basically, training manuals, wrong approach to what they're doing, and that needs to be rethought. It did strike me when I interviewed General Abizaid a couple of weeks ago and put the question to him, are we losing strategically in Iraq? He kind of stopped short of saying yes, but he stopped short of saying no. He kind of said, well, we're doing good tactically. There are a few bright signs on the horizon. But if you talk to officers and ask them, are we winning strategically, you get a lot of worried brows in Iraq right now.
Are commanders concerned about some of the arrangements that seem to have been made with the militia organizations in Iraq? People that were fighting American forces just a little while ago are now running things in Fallujah.
Fallujah is causing a lot of head scratching and a lot of angry emails back and forth. I've had people argue to me passionately that Fallujah was a victory. I've had others argue equally passionately, people in the military argue equally passionately that Fallujah was a defeat. What it seems clear, I think, is that Fallujah was an outcome chosen by the Marines because they didn't see any other good options. Whether you characterize it as a victory or defeat, I think they decided this is where U.S. strategy is going in Iraq, even if the president isn't saying it yet. We don't want to sit and demolish this town, get one more tactical victory that's a strategic loss that makes us look bad across Iraq and throughout the Arab world. So we did kind of turn the town over to the bad guys. The Marines now say, well, it may be the bad guys in charge, but at least it's peaceful. The downside to that is while Fallujah was besieged, while there was a cordon around it, there was no car bombing going on in Baghdad. Since the siege of Fallujah has been raised, we've had car bombings and RPG, rocket-propelled grenade attacks, in downtown Baghdad again. And some people quietly point to a connection between that, hey, the bad guys are coming out of Fallujah and doing damage in Baghdad again. So this is very controversial. It struck me that when I interviewed General Abizaid and then the Deputy Secretary of Defense, Paul Wolfowitz, they seemed to be coming to very different conclusions about Iraq, and specifically about Fallujah. And it struck me that probably there are still deep divisions at the top of the U.S. Government and the Bush administration about exactly what's going on with Fallujah and how much of a model that is for the rest of the country.
Tom Ricks, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thomas Ricks, military reporter for The Washington Post. He joined us from the paper's offices here in Washington, D.C. Here are a couple of the stories NPR News is working on this afternoon. Iowa is drying out from heavy storms that have battered that state for days. No more rain is forecast until at least Friday. Forecasters say that'll give swollen rivers a chance to recede. And the California Supreme Court today, the state's deputy attorney general argued that San Francisco's mayor overstepped his authority when he issued marriage licenses to gay couples. You can hear details on those stories coming up later today on All Things Considered. Right now, you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.